frustrating for all of us to see, but really I think our team and engineering and traffic management group and everyone here in leadership at Tutoli really went above and beyond to not only identify that the bridge at the time that it was hit was structurally stable and didn't pose a risk to drivers, but also to quickly expedite repairs and replacement of the parts of the bridge that had been damaged. We're able to accomplish that bridge beam removal in coordination with, again, of course, the Illinois State Police, the Illinois Department of Transportation, local municipalities and officials from nearby O'Hare International Airport, and we want to thank them all for their assistance. Another closure will be required later this summer to install a new beam and restore the bridge to its previous condition. I think John Benda has more information about the repair project, including a dramatic technical video. No, I've seen it. It is dramatic video of the beam removal. And John, if you want to go through this, exciting and out of the norm project for the tollway.
Hard to follow the last presentation, but I guarantee you it will be better than the next presentation. Greg Stuckel is actually going to come up and help me with this presentation. I'm really challenged if I do this. Is this turned on?
I think Nancy's giving the powers on the side, I guess, the power button on the side.
I withdraw my comment.
I can do it.
Okay, the Balboa Avenue Bridge, which is just south of the O'Hare Interchange on the Tri-State Tollway, was struck at 1:20 on Monday, June 3rd. That's the truck that struck the bridge. It did extensive damage to the first beam, northbound, which is called the fascia beam on the bridge structure. Maintenance crews responded and began immediately removing it. This caused all the lanes northbound on the Tri-State to be closed immediately because of the concrete debris that was scattered about, as well as parts of the truck. So maintenance responded from several actual garages eventually, and we concentrated initially on removing debris under the left shoulder and left wing so that we could restore traffic at least to a certain extent. So at 2:36, a little over an hour, we were able to get two lanes back using the left shoulder and lane one at that location. And what you see are the crews. These are actually welding crews that are actually up there removing debris. And then we began the task of wrapping the remainder of the beam. We did extensive removal of concrete above the shoulder and the lane, but then we actually wrapped the remainder of the beam to keep additional debris from falling so that we could reopen lanes. And that's actually a picture looking up at the cyclone fence and the filter fabric that actually is lining that fence that we use. And we literally drill into the underside of the bridge and attach that mechanically to keep debris from falling. That effort took about 5 hours. And we eventually opened up all lanes of the Tri-State at about 8:49 on that Monday afternoon. We determined that the bridge was going to have to be repaired on an emergency basis, and Greg's going to walk us through that process a little bit, and then I'll talk about some of the traffic efforts.
Okay. It was an emergency, so this is handled by emergency affidavits, so we work with procurement and other departments here at the tollway to get that going. We had to identify a contractor to make the repairs. The obvious choice to us was Lord Construction. Lord built the bridge back in the early 90s. This bridge was actually hit, same beam, in November of 96, and Lord performed the repairs of when that was for that damage. Lord also recently completed widening of this bridge to the north on the Balmoral Interchange in 2011. So we had to develop a plan. The plan was to remove the beam as quickly as possible, order a replacement beam. The beam was ordered June 10th, and the beam was scheduled for fabrication this week. And we wanted to get the repair done by August 1st because Rosemont has a planned grand opening for an outlet mall on August 1st. Okay, we had to determine the removal method. The last time they did it, they used cranes to try to lower the beam. We decided this time that we were just going to drop the beam on crane mats. So we put large timbers on the pavement in order to make sure that the pavement wasn't damaged. That required a full closure. I'll turn it back to John.
Once it was determined we're going to have to close the entire road, we took a look at the entire week to see when the best time was to do that, and then the best time was going to be Saturday night into Sunday. The only major event that was going on that evening was the Blackhawks playoff game, which we originally thought would be over well enough that it would not impact the actual total closure. But we did look at some other routes, and we talked with Business Systems, and you will see through this entire effort tremendous coordination and cooperation between multiple tollway departments and multiple agencies outside the tollway. We looked at diverting traffic on I-88 West to 355 North, but that would have hooked people for another potential toll at Army Trail Road. After some discussions, and not lengthy discussions, just brief discussions with one of my counterparts at IDOT, they said, well, go ahead and use 290. So we struck a deal, and they allowed us to, with verbal authorization, plan on the deployment of various signs along 290, connecting back eventually up to 90 and then back down to the airport in that direction. Our consultant, CDM Smith, worked with us and put together a traffic plan. We carefully looked at all the numbers to make sure that when we started taking a lane out of service, either for the prep work for the closure or for the total closure, that we're going to minimize impact to our customers. And so that's what drove this. Probably best exemplified or shown on this map, it's tough to see, but each of those squares represents a messaging zone, and we used a total of around 25 dynamic message signs, our signs, IDOT signs, the Indiana Department of Transportation signs, to provide advance warning to motorists that this closure was going to occur on Saturday night. And then as the closure got closer, the messages were changed on these signs to reflect actual conditions at the site, and then actual the full closure and the detour. Where we didn't have dynamic message signs available, we put portable changeable message signs. And IDOT was very helpful in allowing us to quickly place those on their system without requiring formal permits or anything. So a significant effort in getting the word out. Communication was also instrumental early on in this, in working with us, working with the airport, and making sure that we got the message out to the media. The media was tremendously helpful in getting the word out, so that I don't think anybody in northeastern Illinois didn't know we were going to be closing the northbound tri-state on Saturday night. And this is the first time the tollway has ever, to my knowledge, formally actually closed and detoured a segment of the system. Not that we want to keep doing that in the future, but we did that and it seemed to work. You want to walk through the timeline?
Okay, on Saturday, June 8th, at 7 p.m., we did a two-lane closure northbound to allow the contractor to mobilize some equipment and get started on the work. 8 p.m., we did a two-lane closure southbound in order to provide him with some buffer zone. 9:30 p.m., while we closed the eastbound direction on the Balmoral Avenue, so the contractor was able to stage his equipment up on top of the bridge. 10 p.m., we did a three-lane closure northbound so that he was able to actually start setting some crane mats out there on the pavement. 11:10 was when the Blackhawks won in overtime. We were watching that because we were actually watching the traffic surge to see if that was going to impact the detour that we had planned. 11:30, northbound Cermak Road, Toll Plaza, open road tolling lanes. We detoured traffic. We closed the ORT and detoured traffic through the cash lanes. We also did a left lane of the two-lane ramp from the eastbound Reagan Memorial to northbound Tri-State closed. And at 12 o'clock midnight, then the detour began, all as planned. On Sunday, by 12:12, so it took us about 12 minutes to flush the traffic out, the contractor was able to begin his work. And less than 2 hours later, at 2:05, he dropped the beam. By 3:30, we were able to open all southbound lanes on the tri-state. 5:30 a.m., we were able to open two lanes on the northbound, so we were able to shut down the detour. And everything was cleaned up by 7:32 a.m. Sunday morning.
Okay, this is a time-lapse video. You'll notice the crane that's down on the bottom of the road. When we actually get to the point where the beam falls, it'll slow down so you can see it. But what's happening right now is the contractor, Lorig, is detaching the parapet portion and the fascia beam portion from the abutment here and from the center pier connection there. And then you'll see there's hammers. These are crane-mounted hammers or backhoe-mounted hammers that are actually moving down the line of actually where they last replaced and surgically replaced that beam, so they were able to actually follow the joint line in order to separate the beam from the remainder of the structure. Their process also then called for them to cut through the center so that they could potentially drop in a controlled manner one half and then the other half of the beam. And as you see, they're making great progress. Again, this was 2 hours of removal that is compressed into about a minute and a half. you notice the beam just dropped down a little bit and started binding in the center. You'll see in a few moments another unit coming in from the bottom. And the little sparks you see, little flashes of light, those are people with welding torches cutting the large volume of reinforcing steel from the original bridge and from the pin replacement and repair that was done several years ago. And here we go. The hammer from the bottom, boom. Oh, it didn't slow down. Now they're working on the final piece right along the center of the structure. In the video we showed the FAO committee, it actually slowed down, and for some reason this is not the same presentation, so you will not unfortunately see the cleanup. We did have a video of the cleanup activities, but let me do comment that Lorig did a phenomenal job of not only dropping the beam in a very controlled, safe manner, but they looked like an army of ants afterwards. There was very little wasted motion from 2 o'clock until 5:30 when they had lanes, started opening up lanes. It was an amazing effort on the part of their crew, as well as a concerted effort on the part of our resources. All lanes were open. Currently on the tri-state, one lane is continues to be closed on Balmoral because obviously we're missing the one beam. The beam is in fabrication right now, and as Greg mentioned earlier, we hope to have the new beam installed later this month or later July in time for the August 1 opening. That's going to be very ambitious to try and accomplish, so I don't want to increase an expectation of beyond what we may be able to do, but we're going to try and do that, so we'll see what happens. I can't stress enough what a phenomenal effort in terms of cooperation between the various entities, not only my operation and maintenance and traffic, and we had some 30 employees manning various road closures and detours that night, as well as 8 staff. Most of the CA staff were involved. The incident manager ran things from the traffic center. We had it all on camera, and we're able to monitor activities, and things really went without a hitch. We had one minor crash that occurred right before the Blackhawks won, because I was out on the road and ended up stopping for the crash. And in retrospect, I think the agency should have sent me to the United Center so I could monitor the progress of that game in preparation for this effort. But excellent effort. I can't say enough about just about everybody on this list and others. The airport is not listed here, but they're very cooperative in working with communication. Several people in our communication department did a phenomenal job. State police in coordinating, providing resources. And Village of Rosemont, their engineers were on scene right after the hit, and they were very helpful with us in evaluating the condition of the bridge initially. And then very cooperative with their police department coming out throughout the entire emergency removal effort on Saturday night. So a very difficult situation, unfortunate, frustrating, but overall we think we handled it well and minimized the disruption to our customers in the process. So with that, that's it.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Well, Director Peterson had raised at the committee meeting whether there was a way of having a state law passed to make sure that all trucks have to be equipped with something that tells them if their dumpster's up. Do you know if there are any, I'll think about it later, are there any states that do have them?
There are very, I'm not sure if there's any states that actually require that or not, but we have not been able to research and find that out. There are some state laws that govern activities of truckers hauling materials involving covering loads and things like that. So it would not be that unusual for a law to focus on something like that. Certainly, we've had some bad experience with dump trucks driving with their box in the air. This truck was hauling screenings. He was not one of our subcontractors, but he was hauling from off our system and using our system as transport. And the box just went up and missed the two overhead sign structures that are before the bridge, but unfortunately were high enough to contact the bridge. So that's something we could pursue in introducing legislation. We would probably want to talk to IDOT and see what kind of experience they've had and whether that's something, because both agencies would really need to support that.
You say we require anybody doing work, any contractors on the tollway, they need to have that warning system to their beds if they're up?
Yeah, as a result of last year's experience, our Traffic Operations Safety Committee reviewed what we currently do, and we're actually looking at it from two standpoints. One, to prevent it from happening, and two, to potentially assess lost revenue when it does happen due to negligence. And we have modified, we're in the process of modifying our specifications to require that any dump truck calling and working on our system, either as a contractor or subcontractor, will have to have a warning device, either audible or visual, in the cab indicating when the PTO is engaged and the box is in the air. So we've done that as an additional safeguard for our work. Unfortunately, it wouldn't have applied to this guy because he was not under contract with us. But that is a new contractual requirement that we've implemented.
Any other questions or comments? Great job.
Thank you.
And now last but not least.
What we've all been waiting for.
Presentation by Finance Chief Mike Kelsch. He's going to provide an update on our refunding efforts. As you know, in the last week, interest rates have significantly increased. But, you know, we'll continue to monitor in the coming weeks and see if there's an opportunity for the refunding to, you know, move forward. We do think that there is potentially an opportunity to save some money. So Mike is going to tell us a little bit more and talk to us a little bit about it.
Thank you. And that might have been the fairest comment that John's made in a long time. As Christy mentioned, we did have a discussion last week at the FAO committee. And we wanted to start by reminding you that we had a resolution earlier to authorize up to $1 billion in bonds to refund 2005A and 2006A series bonds. We at the time had noted that the 2005 bonds were the most likely to be refunded, that each of these series have call dates, which means call dates that are in effect in the case of 2005 in 2 years, and in the case of 2006 bonds in 3 years. And it's really the call date that's important because that's the point at which you can actually effectively lower the interest rate on the new refunding bonds that you issue. So there is a window that we do have until the call dates, until we can call these bonds out. Some of the considerations that we are factoring in to this review, it is obviously that with respect to the interest rates on the 2005 and 2006 bonds, the current interest rate is 5%. And even with recent changes in the bond market, similar maturities now are priced to yield between 2 and 4%. So it would seem that we should have an opportunity to save significant amounts of money based upon those changes in rates. One factor, however, is that rates have increased quite significantly.
A bit of time to get a new system up and running. Now that back office system, which is again in that right box on the top, interacts with a lot of other electronic tolling contracts. We have a contract to get registered owner vehicle data whenever we have a violator and we need to figure out who that license plate belongs to. We have a web provider, and I know everyone here has talked through a lot of these procurements, so they should be somewhat familiar. We have people who do the print and mail, the correspondence distributors. We have retail distributor of inventory, that's Jewel Osco. We have collection agencies. We have various banks that we have to interact with, payment processors, credit card update service, a bunch of other tolling organizations that send us their data every single day so that we can be interoperable. This is the electronic tolling world, and it is, again, it's a village. There are a lot of organizations involved, but you can see the pivotal role that the back office plays. It's sitting there in the middle of all of that. Key milestones to date. So in June 2011, we described to the board the results of a third-party assessment of our current system. We used the term bursting at the seams, and we have been working ever since to find the best solution we can to replace what we currently have today. We want to be as prepared as possible for tomorrow and for the Move Illinois program. We, in January 2012, we met with almost 30 separate electronic tolling organizations as part of an RFI, a request for information process, where they described to us their different electronic tolling solutions. It wasn't just back office, but there were a number of back office providers who came to that. We did that as an educational step because we believed it was essential that we learn the latest landscape of the electronic tolling world before we started a true procurement process. We needed to be educated. In November of 2012, we released a request for proposal, which I will continue talking about in a little bit. In January, there was the deadline for the responses to that proposal. And then March through May of 2013, we went through a best and final offer negotiation process. The award recommendations now in June 2013. We have tried to make this a very thoughtful and very thorough process every step of the way. And we appreciate the support that many of you have given us as we've done that. From the beginning, we've outlined a number of key goals for the new system. And I just thought it might be useful from a contextual perspective to talk through them again today. The first was looking for a world-class software that's in use by large revenue organizations. Another one was looking for the depth and accessibility of development resources. So just to lend a little bit of explanation to that, today in our current system, there are only a handful of individuals nationwide who are able to actually program it. So when we need to make changes, even ones that seem very simple, we have to essentially compete with other tolling organizations that are customers of the same of ETC for those programming resources. So looking for a partner who had a large number of resources and that would offer us accessibility to them makes a huge difference. And especially as we look at things like national interoperability, which no one is quite sure right now how it's going to work. So if there are going to be changes that we need to absorb in the future in this industry, we better have the best access to the best developers and the largest pool of them possible. The next one is depth and discipline of the development approach, including documentation practices. Again, if you're programming changes into a system, especially for compliance reasons with pieces of legislation or things to that effect, it is absolutely essential that they be done in a very standard, very careful, very thorough, and documented way so that you do not end up with a system that feels like a mousetrap system. You know, that mousetrap game where you see the ball at the top and then you see it come out the end, but it goes through so many iterations in between that it's hard to even know where you might have a point of breakage. That is the way that we believe our system has grown up to date, and we do not want to repeat that in the future. Enhanced transparency and accountability, including better monitoring and reporting. Transparency and accountability is absolutely essential. If you are an organization with annual revenues approaching $1 billion a year, it is it's something that you simply cannot live without. So looking for a software that can provide really sophisticated reporting, predictive analysis, is a huge part of what we've been seeking. Robust functionality to support future innovations, such as smartphone-based tolling. A lot of talk in the industry about smartphone-based tolling. It's actually not that hard to put a pretty smartphone application onto a smartphone to make it look like you are interacting with a tolling organization. It is much harder to pull that data all the way through the correct databases and the correct filters and to make sure that everyone who's using a smartphone with a pretty set of images on it, that it is actually posting the correct way and that you can trace a transaction backwards, and if there is a dispute, you can untangle it. So that is another thing that we really wanted to look at. If we're doing innovations, it's the window dressing of an innovation is lovely, but the true functionality of it is very important. Flexibility to accommodate future changes, such as the expansion of interoperability. We talked about that already. And the stability of the architecture and capacity for monitoring to support continuous, uninterrupted operations. I know that Joe Kambich would have a great deal to say about this particular item because it is his headache every single time there is not continuous and uninterrupted operations. So that is, again, just the stability of the system. Very important. So the next slide here is just talking about how we went about trying to solicit quality responses. We did not want to just put an RFP on the street that said, we're a tolling organization, we need a back office, ours is aging, and please let us know what you have. We wanted to do it in a way that was so thorough and detailed that it laid the foundation for a very strong and productive partnership over the coming years. And we did this in a number of ways. We put together an RFP that had more than 7,000 detailed functional and technical requirements. We put into the RFP comprehensive process diagrams, and we did that because we actually think that tolling is so, electronic tolling at least, is so non-standard from organization to organization that describing how you do business is a huge part of helping a vendor respond to an RFP so that they can really understand what they're suggesting they get into. We asked a number of questions regarding project management practices. It's one thing to say project management, but it's another thing to really provide the methodology and talk through it. We asked a number of questions regarding software development and documentation methodologies and the level of rigor and consistency imposed. We asked questions regarding system monitoring tools. We asked, and then we had mandatory software demonstrations that lasted a day each, with structured demonstration scripts with the four vendors that made it to the second round. They brought their products and they worked through a series of very specific things that they had to show us, all the same things, each of them had to do it the same way, show us how they would do it and what it would look like in their system.
Could you give us an example of what that would be?
So one example was adding a field to an inventory item, a transponder inventory item. So there has always been talk in the industry about how lovely it would be if we could offer different colors of transponders. I know that seems kind of silly, but it is something that you hear talked about a lot of places. And right now, most of these systems are programmed really just for a transponder, not a whole bunch of different colors that would also translate, that would lay over different types. So we asked every vendor to show us, well, how would you add a field in inventory to show not only the serial number, the date it was issued, the date it was manufactured, and all of that stuff, and the type of transponder, is it for truck, is it for car, et cetera, but is it a license plate-based one, is it inside, but what if we also wanted to know what color it was? And they all had to show us how they would do that. And then we asked for a very detailed pricing model because, again, if you're entering a long-term partnership, it is often very helpful to have laid out from the outset a very thorough understanding on both sides about how the work is going to be done and what it's going to look and feel like and what the billing is going to feel like, so that there are very limited and hopefully no surprises. All the way along, and I think Christy alluded to this, there has been a deep desire to maximize competition. Electronic tolling, as I said, is a small community, and you meet the same people over and over again in a very good way, oftentimes. But when it comes time to procure the major tool that you're going to use to collect almost $1 billion of revenue every year, you want to create the best competition possible. So the first thing we did was we worked to do an RFP process that has a designation of professional and artistic, which means that in an RFP process that is not professional and artistic, the price becomes part of the score. In a professional and artistic competition, you are selected primarily on your technical score, and the price simply informs the negotiations. The second item is just clear valuation criteria. The RFP was very dense and laid out exactly what the tollway is looking for and described how we would be evaluating it. The third one is equivalence of tolling and non-tolling experience. One thing we did learn in those RFI presentations that we hadn't really known beforehand was that there are providers of software out there that are not long-term tolling providers, but that have excellent products to offer, and we needed to make sure that they were included in a competition because, again, we wanted a competition. The next one is accommodated all hardware and software system platforms. We did not specify in the RFP specific hardware platforms that had to be used. The next one is accommodating different code ownership frameworks within the tolling industry and outside the tolling industry. There are different approaches to owning codes and licensing, so we wanted to make sure that the RFP contemplated both. And then finally, we did have a number of hardware items as part of the procurement, but we indicated in there that we would keep the option to buy them off CMS contracts, master contracts, if it were deemed a better decision at the time. So we come to you today with a recommendation for an award that we strongly believed is based on the best value. It is the software that we bring to you today is through Accenture. It is SAP. Accenture and SAP have worked together for 30 years, and Accenture sells the SAP product. SAP is a major piece of business software that is used throughout the world by major customer service organizations, including things like T-Mobile, American Airlines, DirecTV. And when it comes from a very, just speaking technically for a moment, what a back office system in the tolling world really is a customer relationship management, CRM system, and then kind of a revenue management system. And that has been the bread and butter of the SAP world for decades. So we are bringing to you what we believe is a software widely acknowledged to be among the best in class in the world. It is software that includes a full array of the modules that we were seeking. It is we have spent a lot of time going through the prices and working through all the analysis from every which way, and we strongly believe that the price provided us is fair and reasonable. We know it can be accommodated by our budget. We are bringing to you something that has a number of more on-site resources for implementation and a greater number of maintenance resources post-implementation for support. Again, all of this is aimed so that we put into place a system that is flexible, that allows us to be as transparent as possible, that allows us to make data-driven decisions as we move forward with all sorts of innovations and evolutions over the coming years. And it is not a decision we have remotely taken lightly. I hope that at least comes across.
To address the question I heard earlier today, basically as far as Accenture not having the experience in North America or here, I think I heard that Accenture had experience in Portugal with a couple of tollways there, so out of the country. and Xerox is in, I think it's Texas, New Jersey, and New York.
Xerox has a number of implementations, including Texas, New Jersey, New York, Maryland,
tolling. So they have experience in North America. How does it differentiate? I mean, if they're saying they've got the experience here versus Accenture, and I guess I won't talk about SAP. SAP, the third party, they have the rights to the software. Accenture has the rights to use SAP software.
They resell it.
They resell it, so they have the third party. And then Xerox, their software is, what's their software? What are they using? In-house, off the shelf?
Xerox purchased a company called ACS a couple of years back, and that is a traditional tolling software. And I do think one of the differentiators that you can look for in software, because I again spoke to the customer relationship management and revenue management core of the software that any software has to provide from a functional perspective. One of the things you can really look at in electronic tolling, especially in our world, because we're one of the largest open road tolling organizations in the world, is how many open road violations does a particular system or vendor have experience handling on an annual basis. We have 52 million a year. That is huge. It doesn't even really compare to almost any other tollway out there. And when we were looking through all the results of the very good proposals that came back to us, that was very indicative, because the violation piece is the hardest piece. Most systems can do a decent job at tracking revenue. Most systems can do a decent job at handling an IPass membership database. But it really gets complex in the tolling world when you're managing violations, and it gets very complex when you're managing them in an open road tolling environment. If any software out there had violations functionality, but it was mostly in a gated system, it's kind of a different deal. It's a different set of experiences and a different, probably a different level of flexibility.
So based on even greater comfort level than Accenture and SAP based on that?
They had, among the competitors, the highest number of open road tolling violations processed in a year.
Is that in Portugal?
Yeah.
So we're taking their experience in Portugal.
We're taking the SAP experience worldwide. SAP is a world-class software used by almost every major business at our revenue level or above.
But the largest example of a toll road implementation that the software that's been used in other industries, but of a toll road implementation is Portugal, right, in an open road system.
That is true.
Okay. And the ones in the United States are gated systems, the ones that are...
Many of the referenced tollways in other proposals talked a lot about systems that were mostly gated, or that had far fewer open road tolling transactions than we do.
The existing vendor that we have, they didn't submit a proposal on this, is that correct?
They did not.
And a couple things. One, their system basically doesn't have enough flexibility. Their software is kind of antiquated now, it sounds like, and so they weren't able to adapt and expand with this ORT, open road tolling.
Well, they brought us live on open road tolling, and we've actually had, in many ways, a good working relationship with them for a number of years. But we, as we laid out in the RFP, we're looking for something that is so flexible and so robust that that I don't think it necessarily speaks to everyone's core functionality. Not everybody wanted to respond. There were some other firms that didn't respond to.
Will this vendor then stay in a transition mode for a year? Is it a year, 2 years? Or is it clear on?
We have two more renewal years left with ETC, and we anticipate activating both of those renewal years because we want the transition to be smooth.
And there's it's likely that when you talk about the lane hardware, correct? You know, that's a whole other animal, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be someplace that, you know, another vendor, maybe an ETC, continues in that role, correct?
Yes.
For another, but it's a separate from the back office.
Correct.
For Director Banks, did you have other comments? Are you?
No.
Okay.
The diversity program, I know, can you go in more detail about the diversity? I think they were the, were they the highest as far as their involvement of minority contractors or vendors? 4.5%?
They did not provide the highest number.
Accenture did not?
No.
Okay.
But I might, I mean, I might have to defer to some of the folks around the table that
Accenture's at 4.5%
on these diversity calculations.
4.5%.
They have, they proposed a 4.5% commitment.
As you run both systems over the 2-year period, if expectations of the system are not where we believe they should be, what sort of remedies do we have, if any?
You always have the opportunity to call in parts of the contract that are designed to say, this isn't working, we need to stop, we need you to provide us a different direction, we need to cut ties, we need to get our money back. But usually, in large implementations like this, if you lay out the fundamentals that we've tried very hard to do over the last year and a half, you generally can move forward without major sticking points like that.
But I think it's a point that, you know, as we move forward, and obviously there's not necessarily a contract in place yet, there's a business in the process, board approval, that's something that we'll take very seriously to make sure that we have the right provisions in the contract to hold everybody accountable, because it's something that I think there was some struggle with in the implementation of the last system, I think it's fair to say. So it's a good point.
It's always difficult, no matter what you do.
Yeah, because there'll be a lot of time and effort invested in the implementation. So
it might be helpful, if you'll pardon the pun, to think about where the off-ramps are. So where in this contract do we have certain benchmarks that we want to have met, and if we haven't met them, we've probably already done this, how do we get off of this, call a halt, figure out how we recalibrate with them and just try to keep track of those.
Yeah. Recalibrate or move to a different contract. Relationship.
But even our sample contract contemplates key performance indicators and service level agreement type things that we would have to track monthly.
Does this have to be a 6-year contract? Does it have to be, you're requesting a 6-year contract with this?
The idea behind that was that it takes about 2 years to fully complete an implementation, and we at least wanted to contemplate 2 years of an implementation and then have at least 4 years of maintenance beyond that.
But any of our contracts have the provision that you can cancel them out.
Correct.
Yeah. Director
Redfield? Yeah, I there are a couple of things that, you know, to kind of go back into what Shauna talked about. When this first came before this board is through the committee, we were really based on the decision-making process as we went forward was we were talking about providing cutting-edge customer service to our customers. And in doing so, we really kind of tore this thing apart and began looking at it from the ground up and taking a look at where we're going to have the opportunities to be able to build our system and continue to operate through this time period so that we can remain on the cutting edge. Because one of the things, and this was voiced earlier, one of the issues that we've kind of felt is that we've been a little hamstrung based on some of the confines of our current system. Shauna talked about the fact that we went through a very significant RFI process, bringing in the best of the best that's out there to take the input for what the options and opportunities are, not only out there now, but where we think the industry may be going so that we can take advantage of that. I understand, and I've expressed some of the concerns too about, you know, the experience with this vendor, whether we're taking a look at this simply based on other systems in the United States versus worldwide. The fact of the matter is, this organization has been a leader in open road tolling. A leader to the point where if we take a look at our closest rivals, competitors in that, is we're taking a look at that outside of the United States. The proposal that's brought forth today, I think, provides us as an organization the opportunity to maintain that leadership, not just today, but going forward. And the decision that's before us is it is a difficult one. But the commitment to this board has been to be progressive in those policies, to take advantage, to provide the best service, and be able to maximize transportation opportunities for our customers. Having gone through this with staff, we gave them the directive for things we were looking at through this RFP and RFI proposal process. In sitting down and going through it with them and relying on their expertise and questioning them, I feel that this is the right proposal for us and provide us with the best long-term success going forward.
Thank you.
I just comment that I think the process was well done in the sense that doing the RFI up front, I think, was a very intelligent approach to make sure that after all these years that the tollway is educated on what's out there, what's possible. I think that was a very intelligent approach. I think the RFP on the professional level, where you looked at what was offered, not just simply the price element, was also an intelligent approach. I'd ask you, when you took the RFPs, there was a price attached and looked at initially. It wasn't a secondary consideration that after you looked at things technically, you opened up the price offering, or was that part and parcel?
We opened up the price, we did technical scoring,
uh-huh,
and then put all of that into the correct matrices, and then we opened up the pricing,
right,
and used it to inform negotiations.
Okay, very good. And so my question would be, if you looked at it solely based on pricing, where is the lead candidate here, where did they come in?
After the best and final offer process,
mm-hmm,
it was the, you know what, I might want to ask somebody to double check this for me. After best and final offer, it was the third of five. It would be number three in terms of expense. There were two that were less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of best and final, only two vendors went through that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think what I would comment that judging at what we're trying to accomplish here, that it is that overall technical capability, et cetera, that is the most critical issue here. And again, you know, I applaud the RFI process, but also the way with the RFPs, and I think that was a good approach.
You said we have money in the budget for this, and also to cover the transition of the other existing vendor?
Yeah.
2 years, okay.
So every October, Mr. Kelch makes all of us put together very careful estimates for each of our projects. And those estimates are gone through over and over again, and they often get returned to us if they're not very good. So, yes, as part of our budget exercise last October, we did put together a very careful budget that predicted this and predicted the overlap.
Yeah, and I think the final comment I would make is when you're dealing with something that's primarily customer service, accomplishing a high level of customer service isn't always done cheaply. It's not a bid item. It's a mission and a goal. And I think that has to take primary place in terms of this decision.
We think it's a fair balance of the right technical ability and competitive pricing. You're right. If not the cheapest, competitive pricing. And, you know, if there are more questions, I certainly want to discuss them thoroughly, of course. But I will say, commend Shauna and everybody in this process. It was a long process. We knew that it would be. We had planned it to be, frankly, because this will not be an easy effort. There are many steps even of the procurement process ahead of us to get to a contract. And then, you know, once we do start to implement a system, that will also be a long process because we are such a large organization and we want to be very careful and thoughtful in how we transition so that hopefully we don't experience some of the same, you know, issues that Illinois Tollway experienced with its implementation of its back office system when open road tolling started. It was, you know, those are maybe necessary pains, growing pains to go through, but we'd like to not go through them a second time.
Okay, so there are three directors who haven't said anything on this. I'm happy to hear any comments, but if you have none, we should
move on.
I trust the process. You did a great job.
Good.
Evaluating this.
Thank you. And thank you, Sean. You get to work with them, so ultimately the professional judgment that you exercise about their professional capacity is really important. So we appreciate the effort and time and judgment that you put into this.
Well, thank you to everybody. And I think with that, it brings us to the board summary item, which is a recommendation to award a contract in the length of 6 years and the amount of $44 million to Accenture LLP.
May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any recusals? Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just the beginning. Okay, so now we'll turn to engineering. Paul, do you want to do any overview on this?
I think that the first 21 items we placed on the consent agenda, and unless there are any questions, we can move forward with those. And I could say I wanted to introduce 22 and 23, but I know we're going to also review those in executive session before taking action on them.
Well, maybe just do a little comment on them so that there's an understanding generally about why we're in executive session on those and any important issues. We can take 1 through 21. There are some recusals on the way through, so we'll take some, we have to take some of these one at a time. And Director Peterson, is there anything you wanted to comment on any of these from the committee?
No. I have some questions on we discussed these at the FAO meeting, and I know Director Peterson this morning you gave us some percentage of the DBEs, and I apologize, were those related to this agenda only, those percentages?
Yeah, to this letting, was the 61% of the professional service contracts were DBE.
And there were 61%, are we saying 61% of the dollar?
The dollar amount.
It was dollars, and Director, that was on PSB 13-1 selections. So there were 23 items on that bulletin. Some of the awards that we were recommending today came off that bulletin, but not all.
It looks like we have about 20 contracts here that are about $180 million.
Right.
And you're telling me that 60% of those contracts are going to my MDU?
No, it's only relative to the 23 items that we had on that bulletin for professional services.
So it's not regarding the agenda item.
Correct. Right.
So we put out the bulletins, and then marches on. Some of them get onto this agenda, and some of them have been on others, and some will be on future ones.
Yeah, and it's been our practice that when we start to bring the first ones, the first awards, recommended awards off that bulletin, we give you an overview of what, a snapshot of what that bulletin, the key statistics. And we're going to have that same type of report for 13-2 bulletin, which is, we'll probably be bringing items next month and the following month on that.
We just thought it was maybe more helpful information to do it that way, since these can trickle out over multiple meetings, and just by luck of the draw you may have different ones on different agendas, but that gives you a snapshot of what an actual selection looks like. So if you want to have that report any different way, we're happy to accommodate that.
And you also mentioned the prime contractors again. What was that in relation to?
We have those numbers.
Because there's three primes here on this agenda.
Of how many prime were minority?
Out of the 20.
There were four DBE primes.
Yeah. And on this agenda,
I have three of this one, this agenda. So out of the $180 million, the three primes, one's getting $87,000, the other one's getting $300,000, and the fourth one is item 14 getting $6 million. So we're talking about $6.5 million of prime out of $180 million of contracts today.
Today, that
it's about 3-4% of the $180 million.
For this
of this agenda item.
Yeah, of this agenda item.
And my last question is on items 12 and 13 with the two waivers that you're requesting the board today. Just for my understanding, is it Gustavo that you set the DBE goal on 12 and 13?
The goals were set by myself.
And you're also asking for those waiver requests. You're also recommending the two waivers.
Yeah, I'm granting those two waivers.
Okay. Thank you.
I know at the committee level you
voted, you don't need to abstain or recuse yourself. You'll just vote straight up on those, so we can just run through them. Yes.
I just like in the future, if we're going to give DBE information out in percents, especially when it comes to DBEs, let's bring up the detail as well in terms of what's the DBE percentage and based on African American community, African American businesses, Hispanic businesses, female Caucasian, and let's tie the dollars to those, because sometimes those percents seem like we're right on track, but let's start breaking it down in detail if we're going to be 20% out.
So we get the, is it a quarterly report? When is that next done, the pretty
next month? Next month.
Okay, so let's make sure that when we put that out, that we take some time at the board meeting just to run through those numbers so we can see the guide. It is confusing to do them by the solicitations we put out and then when they come up at the board. Will that work, Director Gonzalez? Okay, good. So let's go through engineering then. The first one, Director Darcy recuses himself, so we need a motion separately on that.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? And we have the one recusal. We have a recusal on three, so we'll take two separately. May I hear a motion on that?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions or recusals. Number three, Director DRC recuses himself again on that. So may I hear a motion?
Motion approved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay, any abstentions? We have the one recusal. We'll do four because there are recusals on five and six. So may I hear a motion on four?
So
second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Recusals? No. Number five, Director Darcy recuses himself. So may I hear a motion on
five?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? We have the one recusal. Number six, Director Towns is a recusal. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? We have the one recusal. Seven we have to take alone as well. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? We have any recusals that we don't know about? Okay, number eight, Director Towns recuses himself. May I have a motion? Second.
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? We have a recusal from Director Towns. I believe we can take 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 together, or do you want some of these separated?
12 and 13. So
okay, we'll take out 12 and 13. So let's hear 9 through 11. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions or recuses we don't know about? Let's take 12 separately. May I hear a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals or abstentions? 13, may I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals or abstentions? We can take 14 and 15 together. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Recusals or abstentions? 16, Director Peterson recusal. Let's take a motion. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Director Peterson recuses himself. Can we take 17 through 21?
So
David, is there anything?
You can go to 21. Sure.
Okay, we'll take 22 and 26. So we'll do those. May I hear a motion, please?
So moved.
All in, a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions or recusals? I think we're going to talk about 22 and 23 separately in executive session.
Yes.
So we'll come back into open session to take action on those. So shall we move to legal? Is there anything?
Sure, Ken. We've had three items that were placed on the consent that Chair Peterson talked about from finance. We have one item that was not ready for the FAO but is today, and it's an IGA between the tollway and Illinois Central Management Services, CMS. Joe Kambich, our IT chief is really the closest to it, so I'll probably let Joe take the floor on that to introduce the board to the topic.
Thank you.
So this is a procurement related to the purchase of a phone system for the new call center at UIC. This is a critical system, probably, as far as the infrastructure goes, as important as computer systems. It provides not only the phone services, but call recording, interactive voice response system, so with the numbers you can go to different services, workforce management. It's completely redundant hardware. We're using this contract through CMS that they've used in the past to establish call center type facilities. So, if there's any questions.
Any questions?
It's not only the hardware and the software, but also the professional services related to installation, training, and support, ongoing support. The type of system like this requires several months to actually install, configure, bring it up, and test. So this procurement will fit within our time frames to get the cost center up in the November time frame.
Just in terms of managing the contract, does CMS do that? Do we do that? How does that work?
They manage
CMS. Mm-hmm. So
they basically make the purchase
CMS.
For us.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Okay.
And the duration of this one?
What's that?
The duration of this one, how long is it?
Basically, we purchase the hardware, and then we as part of this, we get 3 years of support, which is pretty much standard for any. This is really networking equipment,
yes.
That we're buying,
okay.
So it's provided by Cisco. So this is kind of a standard Cisco type product.
Okay. Any other questions on this one? Well, then may we take 1 through 4? And then the litigation, we're going to do an executive session and come back.
Thank you.
Okay. May I hear a motion 1 through 4?
Motion.
All those in the second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Okay, we have a number of things that we'll come back into executive session to discuss. Is there any unfinished business? Any new business? Okay, then I think what we need is a motion to go into executive session. How long would you like to go for?
I don't know if we have like to accommodate questions, so probably 15 minutes somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay, so we'll reconvene around 11:25.
Right. So staff would recommend that the board consider a motion to proceed to executive session pursuant to exceptions in the Illinois Open Meetings Act, specifically sections 2C11 and 2C5, to discuss litigation and the acquisition of real property.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay, we'll see you at about 25 after. Thank you.